part of what we talk about here at night a lot, Tim and I, is this portion of the LSU fan base that never wants to be happy. And I don't really understand it. And to be honest, I'm not an LSU alum, so I think Tim understands this a little bit better than me. I've been covering him for a while. So I try to empathize and sympathize here and go, oh, why is this? Why does nobody, not nobody, that's the wrong word. Why do a lot of people not seem happy with this 8-2 season and on pace to win 10 games, maybe 11 if they went out and win a bowl game? Why is there a portion of the fan base that's still unhappy? So Tim and I are going to talk about that, and then Sam Spiegelman of Tiger Details will come on in. And LSU, big hoops win tonight. They beat Memphis, and they might face Memphis again, Tim. Come on in here. They might face Memphis again in just a couple of weeks in that early season tournament.
Yeah, they're going to be in the Avacare Invitational. Memphis is on the other side of the bracket, so they potentially could play them again. It's weird because I noticed a lot of the teams in that bracket are also playing each other or someone else in that bracket the week before. So, like Charleston, for example, which is LSU's opponent, is playing Florida State, who they potentially meet up in the second round of that bracket next week. So you're going to see a lot of rematches potentially.
Yep. It's like this Tiger team is going to be good, you would think. I mean, the track record for Will Wade is there. It'd be a little unbelievable if this team falls apart. I do agree with people who say, hey, this team's got to make the tournament to show progress. Yeah, that'd be maybe a year earlier than people thought when Wade was hired, but still, with the talent around this team and on this roster right now, I think LSU in the tournament is something that you should expect to see. LSU ranked, and so far, unbeaten. Before we get to all that LSU, though, let's go back to the NFL. And like we do every single week here, it's time to unveil my NFL Power 12 rankings for week 11. And just a reminder here that these are predictions for the 12 teams that I think are going to make the playoffs, not your traditional power rankings list where you just list all the teams in the NFL in order. Those are tired and old and do those all the time. You can find those anywhere. So I have a little spin on it. I've got my playoff projections, the 12 teams, then I rank those 12 teams that I think are going to make the playoffs. We call it our NFL Power 12 rankings. And a little bit of a wild card shuffle here. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But the top tier in the NFL's hierarchy, it's been pretty well defined for the past month or so. You got the Saints, the Rams, the Chiefs, the Patriots, all prohibitive favorites in their respective conferences. And it's probably unlikely to change here in the last 7 weeks of the season. Some teams, I guess, trying to enter that conversation. Chargers are very good. Steelers look great again. Bears, maybe. Still, a high probability that the four teams we talked about before, Saints, Rams, Chiefs, Patriots, your Super Bowl champion, going to come from that quartet. Now, the jockeying for the wild card positioning, a lot harder to handicap, especially in the AFC. If you think the Chargers are the playoff lock, and I do, then you have this wash of other teams fighting for that last playoff spot. A lot of people had buried the Titans. Well, they've won two in a row. They just dispatched New England in about as impressive fashion as anybody's dispatched New England recently. They're 5-4. The Bengals are 5-4. They've got a schedule that you'd think they can get to 9 wins pretty easily here, but with that defense, do you really trust them? Colts are 4-5, maybe the most manageable schedule the last couple months of the season of anybody in the NFL. Dolphins are still 5-5. Ravens, that point differential, they're 4-5, but everybody expects that they'll be around there at the end. So how do you sort out this mess? Well, the short answer is you don't. It's nearly impossible to play Nostradamus here in a league that keeps mutating before our eyes. Now, the playoff picture is going to become clearer by the time we get to December. But remember, even then, it's a little bit of a fool's errand to lock down all 12 playoff participants with still a full month to go. Over in the NFC, a little easier to get a handle on. I believe right now, Panthers and Vikings, they would have to play their way out of a playoff spot before anybody like the Packers or the Cowboys, Eagles, Seahawks play their way back in. A quick disclaimer here on Washington and Minnesota. I do want to say this. Those two teams lead their division, and they've got to be your favorites in the East and the North in the NFC right now. But watch out this week to see what happens. Washington hosts Houston. The Bears hosts Minnesota. If they win those games, that pretty much cements them as the hard favorites in their respective divisions. So here's my Power 12 rankings for Week 11. I'm Seth Dunlap. This is the last lap. Number one, should be no surprise here, New Orleans. They were number one on my list last week. Make it 8 straight wins for the league's most complete team. 5 straight wins against team with winning record. Now, there's a discussion, I think there should be, comparing this offense to the one the Saints had in 2011, maybe even 2009. They now lead the league in points per game, and their scoring is the stat that everybody should know by now. It's been circulating around here today. 61% of their possessions they scored on this year. That's incredible. Drew Brees should also be your MVP leader. Rams still at number two, but here's the thing. If you could ever classify a 9-1 team as a bit of an enigma, the Rams got to be it. Their offense, they're great. Explosive juggernaut. No NFL defense has solved them yet. Now, they did lose Cooper Kupp to IR. Keep an eye on that. But the defense, it's interesting. They are porous, and that's probably putting a little bit kindly here. Everybody thought they'd be a brick wall with Sue and Donald and Tlaib and Marcus Peters. They have not been. And they haven't been blowing people out. Another close win against Seattle. Rams are good. There's no doubt about that. And the schedule means they probably can walk on in to a top two seed in the NFC. A lot more questions about that Rams defense, actually, than I have even for the Saints defense or the Chiefs defense. So Chiefs are at number three on this list. And I just said, the offense gets all the headlines. But look at this defense now. They've held six of their last seven opponents to 23 points or less. Nobody's talking about that. That's complimentary football. And that defense should get better as the weather gets colder. No, Chiefs are for real. And now with that Patriots loss, they've got to be your favorites in the AFC. Anybody who doesn't have the Chiefs right now as your favorite in the AFC, you're just trying to be a little contrarian, I think. Number four, the Chargers. They keep climbing. They keep winning. That six in a row. They were at five last week. And I got to tell you, if the Chiefs weren't mesmerizing the country, it's the Chargers and Philip Rivers, who would probably be the darlings of football fans everywhere. They're not only in Kansas City's shadow, but they're also in the Rams' shadow in Los Angeles. Nobody wants to talk about the Chargers here. Well, you should be. They are a contender. I don't care if they come out as a division champ. I don't care if they got to play that first weekend as a wild card team. This team can win a Super Bowl. I don't think anybody disputes that now. Number five, Pittsburgh, another team that certainly can win a Super Bowl, and they don't look like they're going to miss Le'Veon Bell. And if you miss the news, Le'Veon Bell will not report to the Steelers this season, so he'll forfeit that $14.5 million franchise tag, and he'll go into free agency because they found that loophole next year. But the Steelers are 6-2-1, back in control of the AFC North. Watch out there. Number six, the Patriots. I'm not going to drop them too far for that loss in Tennessee. Here's the thing. If you dive a little deeper into what happened against the Titans, you'll see a Tennessee team with former Patriots at head coach, defensive coordinator, running back, and cornerback. This is a team that was as prepared to play the Patriots as anybody. They built this team to beat New England, especially with what happened with New England kind of embarrassing them in the playoffs the last season. Patriots are going to be fine. You really think the Dolphins are going to win that division or something? Come on now. Number seven, Minnesota. Last week, number nine, so they get a bye and then they move up a couple of spots. The schedule makers did the Vikings a huge favor by giving them the bye leading into this Sunday night game in Chicago. A win for the Vikings in Chicago. A little lanyap here because they actually get Chicago in Minneapolis later in the season. But the Vikings can take control of the division if they would steal one on the road on Sunday night. I'm Seth Dunlap. This is my NFL Power 12 here on the last lap. On number eight, Carolina. Last week, number seven. I'm only dropping him a spot here because there is nothing more brutal for an NFL team than playing a road game on a Thursday night. Ron Rivera's teams just don't get humiliated. They were humiliated 52-21 at Pittsburgh. Let's see what happens here. They get Detroit this week on the road. Then they come home, play Seattle. We'll know a lot more about Carolina. Lose those two games. Uh-oh. Win those two games. Yeah, they'll be fine. They still have a hard time not seeing Carolina in the playoffs right now with how their schedule works out towards the end. They're a spot ahead of the Bears. I've got the Bears at number nine onto the list for the first time in a few weeks. They spent the last month just steamrolling inferior teams like the Jets, Bills, and Lions. Now, that's what good teams are supposed to do. This is the NFL again. Good teams, great teams, steamroll lesser opponents. Now, that soft schedule ends this week as they get the Vikings on Sunday night. A win here. Chicago's in complete control of that NFC North. They're a couple of games, two and a half games ahead here of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Boy, they would just completely take charge of this division with a win. Number 10, Houston. They stay at number 10 after last week. They had a bye last week. Much like the Vikings, Texans benefiting from a bye leading into one of their biggest road challenges of the season. They've also, like the Bears, been beating up on the NFL's also-rans. They get tested this week. They go to Washington. Titans, Colts surging on their heels a little bit. Texans are going to need to keep winning to stay in control of the AFC South. Number 11, Washington. They stay on this list. Can anybody explain to me, and this was my easiest bet of the week, how in the world was Tampa Bay a favorite against Washington last week? That was easy money. And Washington, like they've done all season long, they win after a loss. And in fact, they win handily after a loss. All three losses, they've come back the next week, won handily. Sports bettors got to be loving that. Now, they get Houston at home. This is a test. They can do themselves a huge favor by beating the red-hot Texans this week. And remember, with Philadelphia now really scuffling and getting New Orleans, if they would win Washington at home against Houston, they could have a three-game lead on the Eagles with a month and a half to play. That division would almost be over. Finally, on my list, for the second time this year, first time in 6 weeks, the Tennessee Titans. Once again, the final wild card spot in the AFC. I think it's hard to handicap. I could have put the Colts here, even at 4-5. Certainly could have put the Ravens here, maybe the Bengals. But the Titans, with that defense, that can travel here as the weather gets colder and they're going to have those outdoor games at home. Slight favorites for Tennessee. But they get Indianapolis on the road this week. Winner of that one's going to be in these rankings. And in fact, if Tennessee beats the Colts on the road this week, you can put to rest the storyline of Indianapolis making this playoff comeback under Andrew Luck. That one, probably the game of the week in the NFL. Everybody's going to be talking about the Saints-Eagles, and there's a lot of hype around that one, defending champs against the NFL's best team. I get it. We're obviously going to love to watch that one. But the most important game in the NFL this week is probably actually Titans-Colts. Sneaky good one there. That's my NFL Power 12. Again, Saints at number one. No change there. My rest of my top five consists of the Rams, Chiefs, Chargers, and Steelers. Patriots falling to number six. Where'd I get it right? Where'd I get it wrong? You tell me. 504-260-1870. 504-260-1870. You can text us at 870-870. You can also find my Power 12 online at WWL.com. Coming back, talking a little more Saints and NFL, including the biggest storylines of the 2018 NFL season so far as we've just passed the midway point. I'm Seth Dunlap, and this is The Last Lap on WWL. One from the 214 with a question. So who do you have winning the Rams-Chiefs game? Now, that game got moved from Mexico City to Los Angeles, so Rams get their home game back. That's because of poor field conditions. Tim, you and I were talking off the air just now. You are the huge conspiracy theorist. Why aren't you all on board this NFL is trying to help the Rams here get that number one overall seed by taking away a neutral site game and giving them a home game?
Well, I don't think the Rams are going to win this game. I don't think home field advantage really matters in L.A., considering there's so many bandwagon L.A. fans that cheer for Aaron Rodgers and other fans there. So I think the Chiefs can go in there and win. I mean, just look at the Seahawks. The Seahawks went in there and they almost won.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs are better than the Seahawks. I think the Rams, they're a good football team, but I don't think their home field advantage is that much bigger than what it should be. Maybe when they get a new stadium, but not in the Coliseum.
No, it's really not. That Coliseum, it's been there since, you know, what, 70 years now or so. Yeah, not a home field advantage. We saw them lose in the playoffs last week. Text from the 504, Chargers and Steelers and Chiefs in the AFC. You can't dismiss the Patriots. You just can't. Like, we've seen this before. 7-3, which is their worst record after 10 games in 5 years. But this is still the Patriots. And it's still that division. I mean, what are we talking about here? The Dolphins aren't winning that division. The Patriots maybe have two more losses on their schedule. And I say maybe. 11 wins is their floor here for the Patriots.
If the Steelers can get lucky and avoid the Patriots in the second round and maybe get the Chiefs to play them, and the Chiefs or someone or the Chargers, someone can knock off the Patriots, I think the Steelers have a good shot at getting to the Super Bowl
if they don't have to go to New England. That's right. See, you've caught on here. Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger can't beat New England, especially in the playoffs. So they got to have that home game. Big game there. Steelers now in a position for a first-round bye. Who would have thought that? Biggest storylines right now in the NFL. I want to go over these. As you look at the first half of the season, a little past that, and I think the league is being dominated by these storylines. The first one is an offensive revolution here. The Saints, the Rams, and the Chiefs, those three teams in particular, reinventing the way offense in the NFL is played, molding it a little bit. They're not trying to break the wheel here. They're just reinventing the wheel just a little bit. And it's not just Sean McVay that everybody's talking about. the young coach, what, 32 years old over there in Los Angeles. No, it's the old guys, Andy Reid and Sean Payton, doing it as well. It's kind of like the movies. I always love going on IMDb and reading critic reviews who talk about these young directors and how these young directors are supposed to be breaking out. They're going to have this great career. Remember M. Night Shyamalan in the early 2000s made a couple of great movies, right? And everybody was talking about him as the next great director. Well, then he made Avatar: The Last Airbender and Lady in the Water and The Village, and people quickly fell off that bandwagon. You know who they weren't talking about that's always been good? Steven Spielberg, James Cameron, these directors who've been around for decades and are always good. So Sean McVay, he's great now, and he should be getting credit, but he could be M. Night Shyamalan. He could be making Avatar: The Last Airbender in a couple years. You know the guys who we know are going to be inventive offensive minds for as long as they coach in the league? Andy Reid and Sean Payton. Let's talk about them too, right? We've got the best offense in the league right here in New Orleans, and we've got maybe the most explosive, exciting offense in the league in Kansas City here. Second storyline you got to be paying attention to, and I know we are here, is the MVP race. Young gunslinger against the grizzled vet. It's Patrick Mahomes against Drew Brees. That is the only two people you should be paying attention to in this MVP race. Nobody else is winning this MVP but Mahomes or Brees this year. It's not happening. Don't pay attention to Todd Gurley. Don't pay attention to Aaron Donald or Tom Brady or Phillip Rivers. It's not happening. It's either Brees or Mahomes. Save the tape. It's happening. And I think it's fantastic. We're rooting for Drew Brees down here. But it's hard not to root a little bit for Patrick Mahomes here, too, because he's some combination of Russell Wilson and Brett Favre, I guess. If they had a love child, that's Patrick Mahomes. He's incredible. I mean, that is the future of the NFL right there, much more than Jared Goff is the future. Speaking of Jared Goff, another storyline here. Great pro football has returned to Los Angeles very quickly. And it's not just the Rams. Two of the top five teams in the league reside in L.A., Nobody's getting excited about the Chargers. They should. I'll tell you, the Chargers, you put them on the field right now in a neutral site game against the Rams, I think it'd be about a pick 'em in my own mind. Now, Vegas would have the Rams favored in that one, but the Chargers are as complete as any team in the AFC. That's three of my storylines. I got a couple more that we'll get to when we come back. And what's yours? What's your biggest storylines of the NFL season right now? 504-260-1870. 504-260-1870. And you can text us at 870-870. Text from the 504. Hey, man, what you got against M. Night Shyamalan? Actually, nothing. I really, really liked his movies. I actually really, really liked Lady in the Water, but they were kind of panned critically, right? Like, just to be a little serious here in the middle of this fun sports conversation, I got a lot of friends, family, people that I know that are going through that campfire out there in California. It's devastating, and I know my thoughts have been with them for a very long time, and our hearts go out there. They're dealing with a lot over there. They really are. I know we're isolated away from it. We see the coverage on the national news and online, but it is every bit as bad and as destructive and as terrifying as you might think it is. So our thoughts go to everybody dealing with that over in California. Talking about the biggest storylines in the NFL, really quickly here, I was comparing Sean McVay to M. Night Shyamalan, and the reason I did that is because when you talk about young directors a lot of times in movies, you forget about the guys who always make good movies. Like James Cameron always makes good movies. He just does. Steven Spielberg always makes good movies. He does. Sean Payton and Andy Reid are those two guys, Cameron and Spielberg. Sean McVay, he's a little M. Night Shyamalan. Like, he's great. M. Night in The Sixth Sense and Signs. And I even liked The Village. He was so good early on. But then again, he made Avatar: The Last Airbender. He made Lady in the Water. Like, it just wasn't good. But Tim, you're saying that he doesn't get enough credit from me here. You're saying that there's a couple movies you really like that I don't give him credit for.
Yeah, I mean, he screenplay, She's All That. I mean, that's a pretty good one right there. I won't give him credit because he was also a screenplay for Stuart Little. Not my favorite movie. But, you know, who really likes mice movies? Not me.
Now, I will say this. I'm unbelievably hyped for the Split / Unbreakable sequel that M. Night's doing. It's supposed to come out next year. I think it's called Glass. You're going to have Samuel L. Jackson back in that. And everybody, you know, that's going to be incredible. I think Bruce Willis is coming back for that. Yeah, I know he is coming back for that. I saw that in the trailer, so look forward to that. A couple of other NFL storylines, certainly, that I think has been defined here by the first half of the NFL season. We got some very proud franchises that are now scuffling. They just are. You look at the past two decades in the NFL, you couldn't have a conversation around the best teams in the league without talking about Green Bay or Denver or Seattle. It was a rare year when you couldn't talk about at least one or multiple of those teams at the top of the league. You can't talk about any of those now, and in fact, that's kind of the second year in a row. All three of those teams missed the playoffs last year. All three of those teams probably going to miss the playoffs again this year. Talk about proud franchises scuffling. The NFL hierarchy has been completely redefined here. And finally, and I can't believe this isn't at the top of everybody's list, and I see very few people talking about this as one of the storylines of the 2018 NFL season, and that is the dysfunctional Eagles. And it's interesting because our attention span here in 2018 in this country gravitates towards dysfunction. Our society loves dysfunction. You look at the videos and the content that grabs clicks and likes and views. It's, and I'm not saying this is a good thing, I'm just telling you the facts here. It's car crashes, it's dumpster fires, it's fights, it's yelling, and all of these kind of nasty things, the underbelly of our society. Our society loves dysfunction. There's no more dysfunctional team, at least unexpectedly dysfunctional team right now in the NFL, than the Philadelphia Eagles. This is a team that, without their MVP candidate last year, won a Super Bowl and dominated the NFC playoffs, especially the NFC championship game, and beat the greatest team we've ever seen professionally, franchise anyway we've ever seen professionally, in the Super Bowl. And now they've got Carson Wentz back. They got Michael Bennett on defense. They're supposed to be reloaded here. And they're not just mediocre. They're dysfunctional. This is a 4-5 football team that, watch out here, and this scares me a little bit for the Saints, when you get a champion that is playing basically a must-win game, that's what the Eagles have here on Sunday. If they lose that one, they go to 4-6. And they would have to win out. They would have to win their final six games to even have a chance to make the playoffs. The Eagles are dysfunctional. And that should be one of the top 2-3 storylines in the league right now. It's unbelievable. There's a text from the 504. Seth, it's the Phantom Texter, Saints by 10 over the Eagles. I like the Saints in this game. Won't make my prediction until Friday. But yeah, they're really good. Really quickly here, let's turn our focus to LSU. And Tim, I want to get your thoughts on this because we were texting back and forth earlier today, and I completely agreed with you when you were kind of just raising the question. I don't want to make an opinion for you, you don't want to give, but you kind of raised the question on the text that why are some people in the LSU fan base still not sold on this football team? Why are people wanting to get angry about this football season and not just kind of soak it in and be happy, which is what I think you should do? This was a team that was supposed to win 6.5, 7.5 games, I think was the over and under depending on the site. They're going to be either a 9 or 10 win, maybe 11 win football team when it's all said and done. They have vastly exceeded expectations. They're number 7 in the country in these playoff rankings that just got re-released tonight. So they're right there ahead of Washington State, ahead of West Virginia, and still in the playoff hunt. I can't answer that question. Tim, what do you think?
I mean, LSU fans are they're roller coasters fan base, and I'm an LSU alum. I just think that it's the fact that, you know, LSU fans will find something to complain about regardless. Right now it's the offense. I get it. The offense is 100th plus in the nation, and that's fine. The LSU's still winning with that. Their offense is not good enough to beat Bama, but at the end of the day, they're exceeding expectations. Coach O likely will win Coach of the Year. It probably should be Saban every year, but Coach O will likely win Coach of the Year, and that exceeded expectations, and they're going to find something to bring up. And whether they get all in, they'll go all in after the Miami game, you go all in after the Auburn game, you go all in after the Georgia game, and then you lose the Bama, and the next thing you know, Coach O, people are at his job again. Oh, we need the offensive coordinator. It just happens. And I've said this, I jokingly said this at the beginning of the season. The ideal situation for LSU fans would be LSU go undefeated, win the national championship, and carry Coach O off the field, and then fire him immediately afterwards.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it'd be a win-win for both fan bases.
That's
pretty
funny.
LSU's basically two fan bases. You got your positive, you know, positive fans here, and your negative fans here that are going to be haters no matter what Coach O does, and that's because they're going to find something to complain about. Whether it's the offense, it's the defense. Right now, it's the offense. And Joe Burrow, I mean, he is what you have. You're not going to get a better quarterback than Joe Burrow, so...
On this team, you're saying right now.
Yeah, he's the best quarterback
on this team. Completely
so
agree.
What you're gonna see, even if LSU wins out, wins the Sugar Bowl or wins the Peach Bowl or whatever they go to, the talk this offseason is gonna be, well, we need to find a new offensive coordinator, and it won't be recruiting. It's gonna be offensive coordinator.
Sounds familiar.
So, I mean, you're not gonna win regardless. It comes down to. No matter as long if LSU beats Bama, then things are good. But after that, if they don't, then things are not as good anymore.
Yeah, it's that's what it comes wrote last year. I think it was almost 2 years ago now. After Coach O got hired, I just said LSU fan, just be careful what you wish for here, because a lot of times teams that make and really proud programs in college football, when they make changes at the top at head coaches, sometimes it doesn't go as planned. Look at what's happening at Florida State right now. Look what happened at Nebraska. They're still dysfunctional. So you had to worry a little bit when they made that change. And you know what? Everybody should quickly get dispense with this idea that Coach O isn't the right fit for this program. Like Tim just pointed out, not only are you talking about Ed Orgeron as probably the SEC Coach of the Year, you're talking about Coach O as maybe the National Coach of the Year. It's going to be one of three people winning National Coach of the Year. It's going to be Coach O. It's going to be Dana Holgorsen at West Virginia, or it's going to be Mike Leach. One of those three guys is going to win National Coach of the Year. You're talking about a potential National Coach of the Year that some of this fan base still won't get behind. It perplexes the heck out of me.
It would have been Kentucky's head coach, but Kentucky's kind of fallen off the ladder.
No, it's going to be Holgorsen and Coach O or Leach. I would be shocked if it's not one of those three guys winning National Coach of the Year. We'll take a break here. When we come back, I want to bring in Sam Spiegelman to talk about this. TigerDetails.com. We'll do that next. I'm Seth Dunlap, and this is The Last Lap on WWL. Welcome back to the program. Just got done last segment. Tim and I chatting about it. What's it going to take to make this LSU fan base completely happy? And look, it's a little tongue-in-cheek because I know most of you listening out there, LSU fans, you're darn happy about how this season has gone, even with the LSU loss. You're looking at 10 wins, whether it comes in the regular season, maybe a bowl game. I mean, this is an exceeding of expectations, if there was one here, for Coach O and this LSU football team. So I wanted to talk about a little bit more. And on in comes Sam Spiegelman, who covers LSU football for TigerDetails.com. Sam, good having you back on the show, man. How's it going?
I got no complaints. Thanks for having me back on, man.
Are you a cold weather lover? Are you a cold weather hater? It seems like the LSU fan base is split right now.
Yeah, well, I understand it because it's so hot and humid all year round, so you crave the cold weather. But then it comes, and then it rains a little bit. And then you're sick of it right away. You're wishing that it would warm up. So you can't have it both ways. So I'm enjoying it because it doesn't last for that long.
Yeah, not having it both ways, that sounds like a topic we've been talking about. LSU fan base, can't really have it both ways here. Is this a good season, or is it a par for the course season? In fact, let's just start with that. I was going to ask you that later, but we'll start right there. You know, Tim and I, our producer, were talking off the air that we can't get a grip on just how the LSU fan base as a whole is viewing this season right now after the loss to Alabama, still number 7 in the rankings that came out today. And it seems like, Sam, and I don't understand this, you still have a segment of the LSU fan base that just wants to be disappointed no matter what happens this year, even though the expectations, you know this, weren't very high just a couple of months ago.
Right. If anyone had said in August that the LSU would be 8-2, sitting, just outside of the college football playoff picture with still, an outside chance of squeezing in or at worst playing in New Year's Six Bowl, they would be ecstatic. That was far beyond expectations in the preseason, well beyond anyone could really imagine. And just Coach O's second year at the helm. Really the catalyst in all this is losing to Alabama, especially in the fashion that they did. But even if LSU had lost 29-28, that game is the most polarizing game on LSU's schedule year in and year out, and that is the gauge of the entire fan base. until LSU breaks that string of losses against their arch rival, no season will be good enough. They could, I honestly think that the fan base would be more excited if they were 1-7, but that one win came against Alabama, because that's all they really care about. They have quality wins against Auburn and Miami, and really Georgia is the signature victory on the season at home. Rushing the field afterward, that's a great moment for this program, and it's something that people will look back on as the highlight of the season. But you know, it's still not good enough, because Alabama had their way. They handled LSU, knocked them out of the college football playoff picture, and that makes even an overachieving season like 2018 a disappointment again.
Is it as simple as, hey, if LSU, look, they have a chance to win 10 games in the regular season, not even counting a bowl game here, if they win these next couple of weeks, is it as simple as, okay, if they land in a New Year's Six bowl, even if they're not in the playoffs, do you think that's going to go a long way here to appeasing the portion of the fan base that's still a little on the fence here?
I think it will. If they get matched up against a really quality opponent like an Oklahoma or West Virginia,
Washington State, cough, go Cougs here. No, just that's my I want to see, Sam, this is an inside joke here I've been talking about on the air. I want to see LSU, Washington State, and the Rose Bowl. That's my alma mater. So,
well, there you go. I mean, who doesn't want to see Mike Leach and Coach O at the podium? But I think when you look back on this season afterward, and you know, time goes by until January 1st, and then even after, depending on how that plays out, I think then people will feel a little bit better about this season. They'll speak highly with some context that, hey, we thought LSU would win 6 or 7, maybe 8 games if some things fell the right way, and then they ended up winning 11, or they won 10 and they played in New Year's Six Bowl. Then they'll look back positively, and then the pressure will definitely be on for 2019 and Coach O. But looking at it now in the middle of the season, just, you know, losing to Alabama, you know, an offense that's somewhat sputtering toward the end run of the season, spirits are not so high. But that's just kind of any fan base that's so devoted and such a diehard fan base at this point in the season, where there's not too much to get excited about, you know, getting by at Arkansas and playing Rice this upcoming weekend.
Sam Spiegelman here on The Last Lap. He covers LSU football for TigerDetails.com. On Twitter at Sam Speaks. And let's talk about that scuffling offense here for a little bit. Had a big conversation last week about Joe Burrow. Burrow had a nice game here against Arkansas. Not a very good defense, but still a nice game for Joe. 195 yards, his first touchdown. It seems like, since the election, I suppose, or way before that, last month and a half here. How do you rate Joe Burrow's play? Because I'm still unsure just how to view it here. I'm pretty sure this team would not be an 8-win team, 8-2 right now without Joe Burrow, but I'm just not sure if this is the kind of quarterback play they need to get back to a championship level contender in the modern college football era anyway, Sam.
Yeah, I think Joe is he's a game manager, but he's a really good game manager, so it kind of pains me a little bit to say it, but it's just true. You know, Alex Smith wins a lot of games for the Kansas City Chiefs and now the Washington Redskins. But how far can he take you in the playoffs? He's never taken you that far. And I think, you know, for LSU to be a 10-2 team, potentially playing a New Year's Six Bowl, that might be Joe Burrow's ceiling, and that's a really good ceiling. But he isn't a future NFL star quarterback. He isn't a college football Heisman Trophy candidate. He isn't Tua, and that's the painful way of putting it. He isn't Baker Mayfield. He isn't Johnny Manziel. He isn't a transcendent talent. He's just a really good leader, which is obviously very good for the LSU locker room, and a very good quarterback, which will win you the majority of your games. But I don't know if he alone is a difference maker in those number one versus number two games, like LSU versus Alabama, or, you know, one of the, he might not be the difference to get past a really good, you know, Oklahoma or defense in a New Year's Six Bowl. We'd have to see. But he's been an improvement on what they have, but not by drastic measures by any means.
Yeah, we'll see what happens on the quarterback recruiting front. I know TJ Finley and all these guys coming in the future. But today, huge news is John Emery, kind of as expected here, once he decommitted from Georgia, he does commit to LSU. This really is a huge coup for Coach O, who came in here and got this job on the back of, hey, I'm going to lock down Louisiana. These guys are going to stay in state with me as head coach. And I got to tell you, he's delivering here so far, I think, Sam.
That it, you cannot understate how big of a get John Emery is. And this has been about 4 or 5 weeks in the making. But really, for years, LSU has been after John Emery. He got an offer, you know, before his sophomore season, which is kind of unheard of. Unless you're a really elite talent, like a Derek Stingley Jr. Is another one that comes to mind who got his offer that early. Cardell Thomas, we're talking about five stars in the entire country. John was a major LSU lean for the bulk of his junior year. He visited with his mom and dad numerous times that year. And it seemed like this was a match made in heaven. LSU, you look at the talent they have in their backfield, and they were going to get the best running back in Louisiana, one of the top two or three backs in the entire country. And it's impossible to argue. And then LSU had its elite junior day where the 13 best kids in the state were invited up there, and John elected not to make the trip. He went to Michigan. Then, you know, all these junior days, and John is just not showing up. He finally visited one time in the spring for a practice, wasn't that impressed, and said he didn't get too much attention from the staff. You know, who knows what actually transpired. And he visited Georgia a couple times, Mississippi State a couple times, made a surprise commitment to Georgia right before his senior year at Destrehan. And I think he was pretty content with that, but LSU would not take its foot off the pedal with him. Mickey Joseph has done a really fantastic job. He knows John's whole family for years and years. That Georgia game, he visited Tiger Stadium. And I know LSU won, and it was dramatic, and it was an electric environment. But he sat down with Coach O after that game for an extended period of time, and that had John thinking. He decommitted a few days later, and since then has been all LSU, the most communication he's ever had with the staff. It was a little bit of a surprise to see him not wait till at least December 19th, the early signing period. I know he's even toyed with waiting all the way to February 6th, but getting that commitment, you know, before Thanksgiving, locking in the number one running back in the state, pairing him with Tyree and Davis, it's a monster get for Coach O, and it's a testament to not only Coach O, but his staff, most notably Mickey Joseph.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Sam. Sam, you got any thoughts on this LSU basketball team? Will Wade, they had a test earlier tonight against Memphis, and look, they look pretty good here early on.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that people are getting this excited about LSU basketball when the football season is still going on. I think it's a really positive thing for Will Wade, who I know was expressed a little bit of displeasure at the media for traveling to Fayetteville instead of watching the game last Friday. But, you know, I think it'll take a little bit before he realizes it's still a football first town. But, you know, he's making that a little bit more difficult.
Indeed, Sam. Sam Spiegelman, who covers LSU football for TigerDetails.com. Sam, always appreciate the time, man. We'll have you on again. Thanks so much.
Yep, thanks for having me.